Welcome to the Florida Madcaps, your ultimate guide to experiencing fantastic and unique destinations across our magnificent state. Join us while we lead you on a journey of exploration, recreation, and conservation. The popularity of Florida's natural wonders is on the rise, and our mission is to be your go-to source for conscientious recreation. We encourage you to get out and explore these breathtaking sites, and to leave them even better than you found them, through individual actions and group advocacy. Join the Florida Madcaps as we discover the beauty of our incredible state together.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Florida Madcaps podcast. It's me, Ryan, aka the Florida Excursionist, and I'm here with the usual Florida famous Sunshine State Seekers.
Howdy.
Hello.
All right. So a little bit change in venue today. Instead of recording at my house, I am graciously being hosted by the Sunshine State Seekers at theirs. So if you hear like guinea pigs or anything else.
I guess no matter whose house it is, there's going to be some eclectic noise in the background.
Yeah, adds to the podcast charm. One of our supporters and partners is the Florida Springs Council. If you go to floridaspringscouncil.org/madcaps, you can sign up for their newsletters. You can advocate for the springs and make a difference, and they'll send you a free sticker. It's a no-lose situation. The springs win, and you win. And also, if you have questions, comments, or you leave us a review, you can reach us at the floridamadcaps@gmail.com, and we will send you a sticker. Just need to provide your mailing address. We don't use that information for anything else. Okay. We just went on an adventure yesterday, the Mad Caps, and we were also joined by a part of that adventure by the Great Outdorks, one of our Instagram friends. It was a big group.
Yeah, and we've done some, Chris and I have done some stuff, and you've done a few things with at least a part of their group.
Yeah.
Where 2 years ago, Chris and I hiked Toria with the full Mad Caps group, and then this past year, we hiked with you and Patrick and Dave, who's part of the,
Great Outdoors.
Great Outdoors. Great Outdoors group. The best hiker group name known to man.
That is a good one. I like it. A couple weeks ago, we were recording, and I mentioned that I'd never been to Canaveral, National Seashore, what it's called?
And I was astonished. I was like, what? You call yourself a true Floridian?
Yes.
Said, first of all, it's 45 minutes from our house, so you're coming over. Let's plan this now, and we're going to take you to see everything there is to see in the area.
One of our favorite beaches, and that is partly, I think, due to the proximity.
Yeah.
And I want to say it was very gracious of Chris and Chelsea because they put me up. But at the same time, Chelsea is well into her third trimester.
Yeah.
And it was an all-day thing, and she was a champ. So that was my introduction to it, but you guys know it fairly well, right?
Yeah, I would say my family, my mom grew up kind of in the Mims, Titusville area. So she went to Astronaut High School or middle school. I can't remember. Ah. She went to middle school in the area. I think my aunts went to the high school. So my family and my grandpa lived over there when I was younger. So I was always going over there to visit, not necessarily the seashore, but the surrounding towns and everything. So I've been very familiar most of my life. And for those who don't know, it's the home of NASA. So that's also where you get to see the rockets go up if you want an up-close view, which is another fun activity to do in the area.
Yeah, Titusville, they closed the National Seashore when they're launching the rockets.
I think,
for all kinds of reasons, but safety. But the best place to, if you go out there to watch a rocket, is kind of across the intercoastal. There.
Yeah. We go to a little restaurant called Eliancito and get a, well, not me right now, but before the pregnancy, get a margarita and sit there and wait for the rocket to go off or be canceled.
It's a blast.
I'm surprised Jimmy Buffett hasn't written a song about that. Very Florida thing to do. Oh, cool. Yeah, it was a blast. So what was the first place we went to? Was it the beach? That we went to first,
yeah,
right?
The first, yesterday on our little trip, we kind of hit it later in the day, and one of so on the way there we hit one of our favorite little spots, the Playlinda Brewery, and Ryan and Chris had a beverage and I had a nice cherry cola. And that's kind of a there's two locations, tiny little mom and pop place. So we hit that up, then went over to the beach. And just a side note for anyone who likes to partake, it is one of the few beaches in Florida where you can legally bring alcohol on the beach. So in a can.
So you can just stop by the brewery. And the brewery is really cute. It's that one they call Hardware, and it's in this tiny little downtown area because Titusville was a port town and I think railroad town as well. But
and I like to state that, not that I encourage people to do whatever, everyone do what they want, but most places do not allow that. And I do encourage people to follow the rules of the land managers and knowing that it's okay there. So if that's something you want to do, that it's probably going to be more of an option for you than other beaches.
Yes, because I noticed there, I'm a kind of a state parks guy mostly when I hit the beaches. But that one's federally owned.
And yes.
There were a lot of differences. and so one thing is the cost, right? The cost was more just to get in.
It's $20 to get in. Yeah. They recently went up.
So most of the beaches in our area that aren't state parks, like we're talking New Smyrna, Daytona, they're all pretty much $20 to.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So if you're just walking in, you're at New Smyrna and Daytona, you can walk in. You don't have to pay. I don't think so anyways, but if you want car access, mm-hmm. it's $20.
Okay.
So I think they're kind of just keeping up with the other beaches in the area. One thing Chris and I do, because we are local, is we get the annual pass.
Okay.
And that's $40. So you go twice, that pays for it. But it doesn't only pay for beach access. It pays for a few other things in the area, like use of the boat ramps, as well as Black Point Wildlife Drive, which we'll talk about later. Oh,
yeah. That was nice.
And I think a few other things as well. So it's kind of an all-inclusive annual pass. And they have senior fees and a few other discounts, military discounts as well.
It was free for military, I think you said.
Yeah, I think it's national.
Yeah. So when you drive in, you go through the gate, the ranger gate. They used to have it that if you had an annual pass, there was like a little side entrance, mm-hmm. so you didn't have to wait in the line. But from our recent experience, it doesn't seem like they practice that anymore. Everyone has to wait in the line to get through, which is fine. And when you get in, also, there's another option where you can get a backcountry pass if you want to go on part of the beach that has a cap. Where you have to hike in and stuff. So it's, if you're physically able to do it, it is a little strenuous journey, but they cap it at 25 a day and you get that at the ranger station as well. I can't remember the cost off the top of my head. When we did it last time, I think it was $5 a person.
I think I saw the sign yesterday, said $5.
Yeah.
But you get an access to the area of the beach that has where they limit the number of people.
Yep.
So you get more of the beach to yourself.
Yeah.
Right?
Which is a pretty exclusive experience in Florida when most of the beaches are packed in the summertime. So that's a nice option to have. And we'll get more into that when we get further down the wildlife drive. Yes, or not?
Speaking of wildlife, when you are at the ranger station, it is an excellent opportunity to possibly view one of the rarest birds.
Yes. The Florida scrub jay.
We did see one yesterday waiting in line at the ranger station. That was so cool.
Now, not this time yesterday, but the last time we had gone, we had seen like three or four of them, and they were all on the Canaveral, like "Welcome to Canaveral Seashore" sign. It was very like otherworldly, utopian. Never seen them all just hanging out right there before.
And quails, Bob Whites.
Yeah,
it's weird. It's just right when you're sitting there waiting in line, so you don't even mind waiting in line that much because the scrub jays are all flying around.
And there's usually little white butterflies everywhere too. It's very pretty. So you wait in line, you get in, and there are 13 different piers. Yeah, huh. They call them piers, but beach access points. Now, one thing to note is this area is not managed by man very much. There's no development. When a storm comes through, they don't bring in truckloads of sand to fix the area. Mm-hmm. They kind of let nature do its thing. And recently, we've had some...
The dunes washed out.
Yeah, the dunes washed out. I don't know if it was from a heavy storm or if it was just from the changing tides and sea level, and they washed all the sand across the roads. So for a while, it was only open 1 through 6.
For half the year.
For half the year.
It was, you couldn't even access the further ones.
So they recently reopened. So for anyone to visit, just a note, Piers 1 and 2 are more popular for fishing. Mm-hmm. So if you're looking to go swimming, I recommend passing those two by, because the fishermen's lines will be there's always it's kind of a rough tide there sometimes too. So you'll float into fishermen's lines. And I personally say if that's for you, go fish there. But if you're looking to swim, go a little bit further down, mm-hmm. but not too far down.
Oh, yes. So yeah, being federal, it had a number of rules that were not like some of the state parks. Like, you could have alcohol in cans. And also, how many of them, there were nude beaches at the end of those, would you call them piers or
yeah.
docks?
Supposed to be 13. Yes. And there's ample warnings when you drive out there. It does
there's, signs. There's signs that say you may encounter nude bathers at Pier 13. In reality, that starts around, I would say, Pier 10. Sometimes.
Yeah, it all depends.
Usually it's 11 through 13, but so, the more crowded it gets, that's a very popular section of beach, because that's not something you can do in a lot of Florida.
They took me down the entire drive just so I could see everything.
Well, we also wanted to see the state of the roads.
Yes.
Because they had just reopened all the piers, and the last time we had went, there was sand over the roads. You couldn't get down there. So we're like, okay, let's go see the state of how everything is.
And there's a turnaround at the
yeah.
end.
Yeah.
Well, we didn't anticipate. Yeah, the dunes have washed out, which means the buffer zone between the roads and the other kinds of fishermen. Yeah,
the dunes bathers. Used to block view of the beach. So the people on the nude beach would be obscured by the dunes that were there. And it appears to really not be the case anymore.
Yeah, so I think the more adventurous crowd stay towards the exposed section, but there are sections that are still obscured as well. Just keep that in mind when driving down the beach. If that's not for you, or you got little ones in your car, you may want to turn around at Pier 10 and not go all the way down.
Yeah,
there were some people dressed in their suits.
Yeah, their birthday suits. Happy birthday.
I was really impressed with that drive because it's very dynamic.
Yeah.
Like you said, and there was a lot of vegetation, and it was
sea grapes and saw palmettos, gopher tortoises. It's
those
beautiful.
Little butterflies.
Yeah.
The Galardia, which aren't native anymore.
Interesting. Anymore, huh?
Yeah. Someone decided that, but
someone brought their hammer down and said that's actually from Texas or something like that.
Oh, really? Man, just imagine being all of a sudden classified not native.
They're pretty though.
Yeah.
They're naturalized.
I was like looking all around, and then we got closer to the dunes kind of faded away, and I was like, oh boy, look at the beach.
Sun's out.
Yeah. Sun's out, buns out. Yeah. But we ended up turning back around after we checked out the state of the roads. And I think we got out at Pier 8.
Yeah.
And enjoyed about an hour at the beach.
It's changed quite a bit because of this disturbance with the water. So the water, again, I'm not sure exactly what caused it. And these... These are natural features anyway, the barrier islands, mm-hmm. and they change. I mean, it's part of without having like rocks and stuff to keep them in place. So it's to be expected somewhat. But the water washed up over from the beachside into, it's a very thin little piece of mm-hmm. land too. So it washed up over into the Indian or the Mosquito Lagoons right mm-hmm. there. But so they used to have every one of them a big, huge structure that goes up and over, and they're ADA accessible. They have ramps yep. to get up and over. But the ones obviously that washed out now you can just walk straight out to the beach.
Yeah.
Oh.
So it's definitely a changing climate, depending on just the natural phenomenons that we have going on here in Florida.
I was really impressed. The water was beautiful. It reminded me kind of the Gulf Coast around Destin area. Mm-hmm. When the last time I saw that, I was really impressed. I don't know how it normally looks,
now,
but
the
I like that.
I would say the last few times we've been there, the water's been amazingly beautiful. But historically, yeah. it's usually pretty
kind
gray.
Grayish brown.
Not clear.
Mm-hmm.
Very much what most of the Atlantic coast is known to be.
Mm-hmm.
Where you get further south in Florida, it gets a little clearer and bluer and stuff. But in our central area, it's usually not that way. And I'm not sure if that's because of the changes recently.
It could be
with
the slope.
Sand and the slope. It used to be very kind of, so it's our favorite beach. It's not a lot of people's favorite beach. Mm-hmm. And there's a few reasons why.
Not super kid friendly.
It's not super kid friendly. The amenities are few. So it used to be that when you went out to the water, there'd be where the waves hit, kind of a drop off. Mm-hmm. So it'd be really hard to get out of the water once you were done swimming, because the waves would come and kind of like keep pushing you into the sand, and you're trying to climb up the sand that's a little loose. sometimes you're just rolling around trying to get out. Doesn't seem to be that way anymore, at least right now.
Speaking of water, make sure that you bring everything out there with you too, because once you cross over a Max Brewer Bridge, it's a good 10-minute drive, I think, before you get to
make
the beach.
Sure,
and there's nothing out there. There's
full.
No water. There's vault toilets.
Yeah.
No gas tank full. Convenience store.
Yeah. Yeah. You're no convenience sunscreen. Store. There is a vending machine near where you. Near the ranger station when you come in, but just from Chris and I's experience,
doesn't seem to work very
often. Yeah, it's typically out of stock or out of service, so do not rely on that vending machine.
Kind of like the ice cream machine at McDonald's.
It's broken.
But we enjoyed the beach, and then we went to the Black Point Drive. Now that was cool.
Yeah, that's one of our favorite features, and typically when we go, it's Player Linda Brewing. Go to the beach, and you got to hit Black Point on the way out.
Yeah. And oftentimes when we go, we'll go at sunset. This time we went more midday just because all the activities we had planned for the day. And it's during sunset, especially when you got rolling thunderstorms in the distance, it's just absolutely stunning. And if you go more towards the fall, then you have all the migratory birds in the area. So you'll see birds, gators, all kinds of critters.
It's famous for
birding. We had a little baby gator the last time we went, like kind of scurry across the road.
We had a big one on the main drive a while back that was just right on the side of the road.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of gators out there.
Yeah, really pretty, like marshy kind of drive. What's the environment called?
I would say salt marsh.
Yeah.
But it's, I think the reason why, and it's sort of like a safari. There's water on both sides and these elevated roads that go through there. And I believe to some extent those roads are like remnants of spoil islands that they did to kind of cut back on mosquitoes. Mm-hmm. If you look at the aerial maps at a lot of these communities, way back when they tried to mitigate the clouds of mosquitoes and it's kind of sad actually. You can see they're all dredged out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But this one they've restored to some extent, I think. And then they've got it's a birder's paradise sometimes. Mm-hmm. The best time to see birds in general, wildlife is like morning and evening. So the middle of the day, we went in the middle of the day yesterday, but it's still really pretty.
Yeah, we saw some heron, great blue heron and sandhill cranes. Not sandhill cranes, egrets and a few other things. There's a few different spots. So when you pull in, you can, the Black Point Wildlife Drive, just to note, if you have the annual pass is included. If you do not, it's a $10 fee, which I think you can pay digitally and in cash, but sometimes that kind of changes.
Is it on the honor system, basically?
It is on the honor system. I have seen it manned before, where they will check to make sure you're following the rules. But typically no one's there monitoring. But, you know, just support them. So whether you have the annual pass or you need to use the day-use fee, follow the rules. But there's a few pamphlets you can pick up at the beginning that will kind of, like a guided tour, self-guided tour. Along the drive, there are pillars that will say one, and then you go to your pamphlet and read a little bit about that. And it goes all the way down. There's a few areas to pull off, a few different bird towers and birding docks and stuff that you can go see if you want to check out what's in the water. There's a really larger one, which we went and checked out, where you can just see the whole view of
the platform,
the surrounding area. It's absolutely beautiful.
I think that the trail, the Alan Cruikshank Trail, I believe it's about 3 miles or so. You can walk all the way out around one of the other spoil islands, and the lookout tower is part of that.
Yeah, we've gone out there and done quite a bit of hiking and exploring in the cooler months.
It's very exposed to the sun, so I mean, it's not something you want to do in the middle of the day in the summer. Yeah,
not a lot of shade around that area.
No, But like you could spend, and you can also access this via bike. Mm-hmm. It's bike or car. It's not really designed for foot traffic. I would think it would be unsafe because there's not, you're really far out there. It can get really hot. Storms can roll through really quickly here in Florida. So I would definitely make sure to either be in a car or have a bike with me in case I needed to seek shelter.
Yeah, there's limited shelter areas there.
Right. There's one restroom along the drive, just to note that if you start, and there is a restroom about halfway through, and that's near the observation tower.
Yeah, there's a little rest area.
Yeah, one thing I thought was pretty cool is, you know, if you go to, say, like New York City, and you're looking at the Statue of Liberty, and they got the mounted binoculars that you put a quarter into and you can look for mm-hmm. a few minutes. They had stuff like that, but they were free at the observation points. That was nice.
Yeah, and they have them not just at that one. They have them at a few different observation points. They have those little telescopes that you can go look out around you.
Yeah, there's one that's wheelchair accessible. Uh-huh. And the thing is mounted low, too, and kind of made for that.
Yeah.
That was great. Just to keep in mind, it is a limestone road. It's pretty narrow. Two vehicles can squeeze by. But a lot of times, make sure you allocate some time and pack the patience, because you can get behind a row of vehicles that are moving really slow that are near the middle of the road, and you're just stuck behind them.
Yeah, some people don't have, I don't know, the courtesy, or they're just not observing their surroundings to know that, hey, there's five cars behind me. I should pull off to the side of the road for a bit and let them pass. And they're right in the middle and there's nothing you can do. I suggest just enjoying your time.
Yeah.
There are little pull-offs.
Yeah.
Too. And a lot of people will. They'll see you coming up behind them and kind of get to the side. Yeah.
I saw a few folks that were really enthusiastic about the wildlife. And then when you see something that you're very enthusiastic about, sometimes you forget your surroundings and just focus on that. But after we did that wildlife drive, which was one of the highlights of the evening, we meet up with the Great Outdoors, and then we go on a bioluminescence paddle. It was an action-packed day. Now, that was great.
Now, that's probably one of the things that I find that a lot of locals have not done. And I would even put me on that list for many years, because I think, 4 years ago? Was it my first time? Maybe five out there?
Yeah, I actually found out about it through like my geocaching friends from years ago, that they would put together an event and provide a kayak for me. And I was like, whoa, I mean, and it's definitely, so there's different ways you can go about it. You can, there's a huge tour industry.
Yes.
And there's, I think, a multitude of different companies you can sign up with. You could do like the Clear Kayaks and that's a great option for people who don't have a watercraft, or people who don't want to go out there on their own, people who don't know the area well. For me, I am not a tour type of person, because I don't know. I always get anxiety in a groups where there's a tight schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what we have to do.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of just want to float around and do my own thing. And we know the area well, so we know we get into this section of the lagoon where the bioluminescence are almost immediate. You don't have to paddle in, because a lot of it, what do they paddle in? Holover Canal?
Yeah, that's the first time I did it was going down Holover Canal. And I really don't. There's a few different places. One of them is Beacon 42. That one's very crowded, but we like going to, and we're going to give away our secret here, Bears Cove boat ramp, which the Holover Canal is right there. I don't suggest or recommend anybody getting into the Holover Canal. If you're a really good, strong paddler, sure. And if you go, there's some coves and stuff you can go in there that their bioluminescence is great. But the one thing that I learned is there's a huge current depending on which way the water's flowing, because it connects to a couple of different bays, I guess. Mm-hmm. And if you go down the one way, sometimes you're paddling really hard to get back in.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay.
And unless Chris is there to tow you out, which he had to do, I think, with your dad, you had to help with, and with our kids, had to help get them out.
Uh-huh.
Didn't have the strength.
Yeah, no, it was a nice, easy paddle. Once we got out there, there was actually a number of us, I think, seven craft in all?
Seven craft, eight people. I was counting everyone to make sure we all say it because it's dark as well. So I do recommend, and we didn't have glow sticks on us, but a lot of the tours will tie glow sticks to their craft because when if you have a flashlight, it's going to affect your eyesight, which makes the bioluminescence harder to view.
Mm-hmm. It's probably best to do that. And actually, I think legal-wise, you're supposed to have at least a flashlight.
Yeah, like we all had flashlights and headlamps with us and everything. But I think the glow sticks are a great idea as well. To have on you.
Yeah, we did. I think we were legit and legal, and it was pretty low intensity.
Well, we stayed right in the lagoon. I don't know if that particular spot has a name, but
yeah, it's kind of so when you go to the Bears Cove boat ramp, it's a pretty large parking lot with really long spaces for people with their boat trailers. And then there's kind of I guess it's going to be on the west side, the lagoon right there, and there's a little hole in the mangroves that you just have to know go. Launched in through there, and we actually learned the last time we went with Leonia that there's a lot of ants, a lot of fire ants there. Unfortunately, yes.
I saw some.
I warned everybody about that. So don't stand on the side of the shore very long.
Yeah,
in any one place.
Move and get in. It was great because we launched, and then the different areas of the lagoon we were at had different intensity of the bioluminescence. So we kind of experimented by moving around and seeing where it was the best. The moon was a little bright, but there was a heavy cloud cover.
Yeah.
So when it sank behind clouds, it was amazing. Seeing the fish dart away from our paddle craft.
Yeah, they're like comets going through the water.
That's one of my favorite things. Seeing the mullet and stuff just fly through like a flash of lightning. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So a note for anyone interested in doing this, this is a summer warmer month activity. The bioluminescence are active, the hotter the water is. And it's a phytoplankton that cause
dinoflagellates.
That cause the phenomenon that when the water is disturbed, they light up. So you're not going to look at the water and just see it glowing. Once you get in the water and you start paddling, you disturb it with your hand, you mm-hmm. see fish going through. That's where you're going to see the fireworks take off.
Which, any sort of movement causes this response. And I'm not exactly sure what the reasoning that people have figured for the response, but I mean, it really is otherworldly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another thing, to keep in mind, it's Florida, it's the summertime, it's by Mosquito Lagoon.
It is Mosquito Lagoon.
It is Mosquito Lagoon. it's named for a reason. So I'm one to cover myself more than to treat myself with chemicals as much as I can. So I like long sleeve shirt, long pants. Sometimes it will wear a hood or something. You can even put mosquito nets over your face, which I kind of wish we did that yesterday because I wasn't getting bit on my body as much as I was my face. I did put DEET on my feet and ankles, but it didn't really help very much.
You guys warned me.
Yeah.
And the group. So I put a lot of repellent on. Bad thing was because I did have a headlamp the whole time, and occasionally I would turn it on just to look for something and check, like when I dropped my paddle. Yeah, I inhaled mosquitoes and insects because as soon as I turned them on, they were really drawn to it. The headlamps right on my forehead, and then there's my mouth as I'm breathing in. They just all, I was like, ugh. So that was that. I think near the end, we enjoyed it for a while, but ultimately the intensity of the insects got to a point where we're like, okay, let's dial it in. But we got out there at night. So if you do that, make sure you have headlamps because three of us had the exact same inflatable paddleboard. So all the gear was getting mixed up, but we did get it brought in. The neat thing that I saw near the very end was a crab swimming. And it was going in the water, it kind of looked like one of those aircraft from Avatar. You know,
first saw Avatar, that's what I think that's what they designed a lot of Avatar off of, was a lot of sea life and bioluminescence.
There's a few places in the world where the bioluminescence is, but it is a really rare phenomenon. I think Puerto Rico has a beach or something like that.
And I think there's some spots in South America, but I could be incorrect there. But it's not very common throughout the world to be able to witness this. There's also different kind of creatures who do different kind of bioluminescence. So this is the aquatic version. Yeah, you can go to the Carolinas and see fireflies.
Yeah, there's no fireflies in Florida.
Yes, there are. You just got to venture out.
Yeah, I felt bad because I was driving home one day and saw one hit my windshield at night, you know, and you're like, oh, brother, that's there's not too many of them, you know. But yeah, that was a great time.
Yeah.
And so we definitely enjoyed our time. And it was all of that was in one day. And again, Chelsea and Chris really persevered, especially Chelsea, because we ended up we got out so late. And then we decided to go to Waffle House after midnight.
Yeah.
But the service actually was great. There was no chairs being thrown.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun.
I just want to note one more thing about if you are doing the bioluminescence and planning on the best times to view. Also, if you got a full moon and there's a lot of like light from the moon and stuff like that, they're harder to view. So what is it? A new moon?
Yeah,
you want to go out there for
like a quick search on the on a search engine on the internet and find out when the best times for you can find out when the moon rises. So even if it is a full moon, if you time it right, the moon will be over the horizon.
Right,
but it makes a huge difference. Ryan mentioned that earlier. That when it was behind the clouds, mm-hmm. you could see the bioluminescence a lot better.
Now, if it is going to be dark, the tour groups do know this, so it'll be more crowded the better the conditions are. We have noticed that to be true.
Yeah, make reservations ahead of time if you plan to use a tour group.
Yeah,
this little cove though, they tend to kind of go on the outside of it because a lot of them launch into like Haulover and go a little further out west.
Yeah,
this little cove. Every time we've been there, they kind of come into it a little bit. The tours, yeah. But it's usually pretty quiet there.
Yeah. Yep, it's very shallow too.
Yes, it is. I saw, two people near the very end as I was exiting?
Yeah.
It was paddle by, but other than that,
yeah, and I think that was just another, private group of people us. I don't think they were a part of a group. Although, every now and then, we've gone out there and seen tours where it is just a guide and one other kayak. So, maybe that's more of a private tour. Romantic evening.
Well, do they have, the speaker? They're just talking
to
one person.
Yeah, you hear them talking and...
Yeah, most of the lagoon is about, I would say, I imagine about waist deep or so.
Yeah.
When we went with Lyonia last time, she was on the paddleboard and trying to shake it and splashing, and it was a really cool effect because the
water
ripples
was
coming
rippling
off.
And glowing, and yeah.
But she slipped because anybody who's been on a paddleboard, it's tricky when you're standing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, she went right in and big explosion of light, and then also immediately stood up. She's like, wow. It is so shallow.
So if you are around Canaveral Seashore, it's a national park, and there's tons of things to do there. Definitely could devote a weekend to it. But thanks for tuning in, and as always, enjoy Florida responsibly.
Thank you for listening to the Florida Madcaps. We hope today's episode was enjoyable. Your input is important to us. If there is a topic that you would like to know more about, please let us know. The Florida Madcaps is presented in partnership with the Florida Springs Council, the only nonprofit advocacy organization focused solely on protecting our Florida Springs. Get a free spring sticker and join the Florida Springs Council at floridaspringscouncil.org/madcaps. As a token of our appreciation, we are giving away a free Madcap sticker to anyone who leaves us a review. All you have to do is send us your contact information to the email provided in our show notes. We will take care of the rest. Thank you for being a part of the Florida Madcaps community.